Ho, ho, ho! Merry Christmas! Who's next in line to sit in Santa Sala Monster's lap? Ugh. Easy there, kid. I need to use that later. Ho, ho, ho! And what's your name, little boy?
Mark.
Hello, Mark. Tell Santa Sala Monster what you want for Christmas.
I'm not stupid. I know you're not the real Santa.
Is that so? Looks like we have ourselves a little smart Mark here. Tell Santa what you want.
I want a John Cena Never Give Up shirt.
No, you don't. You want a Cesaro King of Swing shirt.
No, I want...
Here you go. Now do all of us a favor and tell all your little friends to start wearing these shirts, too. And while we're at it, here's a sound-off shirt.
But...
Okay, who's next? Why, hello there, little girl, and what's your name? Oh, jeez. Here, let Santa Sala Monster reach into his sack.
What is this?
This is called a Z-Pack. Make sure you're close to a bathroom after you take it. Next! What's your name? Forget it. It doesn't matter what your name is. Here's your gift.
But these are just shower curtain rings.
Yeah, well, they're made of brass, and they're just as imaginary as Santa Claus. Now run along. This is the Sala Monster, and I'd like to take this moment to wish everybody out there a very Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Happy Kwanzaa. Happy Boxing Day. Happy New Year. Jesus Christ.
Cut.
How many fucking holidays are there? Why don't we just throw Festivus in there too while we're at it?
That's not a real holiday.
No shit, that's not a real holiday. I know that. It was a rhetorical question.
Excuse me, I have to go to the bathroom.
Get lost, kid. That thing isn't recording now, is it?
No, it's not recording.
Okay, good.
But I really have to go.
Not now, you little brat. Scram.
Okay, people, let's take it from the top one more time.
This is the last time I'm doing Tell me that isn't what I think it is.
Well, you know what they say, Sala Monster. It's better to be pissed on than pissed on? Wait, that wasn't right.
You fucked it up. Fucked the whole thing up. I give you one fucking line and you screw the whole thing up. The whole bit. Ruined. Just like that. The Sala Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
I'm fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
It's the Christmas show, episode 360 of the Sala Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, December 21st. 2014, I am the Sala Monster. It's also the first day of winter today. And thank you for downloading the podcast. As always, Merry Christmas to those celebrating. Happy Hanukkah as well. We're in the middle of that. This was a good week for me. I got the email a few days ago from Podbean informing me that the Sound Off made its top 10 list of most popular podcasts of any kind for all of 2014. And it was the only wrestling-related podcast to crack the top 10 as well. So... my thanks to all of you for helping to make that happen. That is a huge accomplishment. Thousands of podcasts are on Podbean, more being added by the day. For us to be in the top 10, not just in the sports and recreation category, but for all podcasts across Podbean for the year is very cool. I'll put that up there on my mantle with Best Sports Commentary nominee for the Stitcher Awards last year. So we're rocking and rolling. Big thank you to everybody for making that happen. I also made... Slate's Year of Outrage on their website, which is just comical for a lot of different reasons to me, and very appropriate, I think, I would make anyone's Year of Outrage. So you could check that out. I posted a link to that on my Twitter page. And a quick note for those of you who listen to the show in iTunes, and there are many of you, just be aware, I got a notice from iTunes that starting tomorrow, Monday, December 22nd, straight through until the first Monday of next year, which I think is January 5th, I'm being told that all new podcast submissions will require additional time for review and processing. Now, it may have no impact on you at all, but if it does, I just wanted you guys to be aware of it. It's an iTunes issue. They've put a notice out. It's probably across the board for multiple shows. And if that happens, not a whole lot I can do about it. Hopefully, it's just temporary until the beginning of the year. So just be aware of that. And again, there's always other ways to get the Sound Off. If you ever have any sort of issue through iTunes, you can go to Stitcher. You can get it through TuneIn Radio. If you have an issue with Stitcher, you can get it through iTunes or just direct download. We have an Android app. So there's never any shortage of ways to stream, download, or otherwise listen to this podcast. That's why I try to get it out as many to as many avenues as possible. So you guys are always well connected and never without your sound off. Now, before we go any further, I did announce last week that we were doing a poll. I polled you guys on what you thought was the best sound off episode intro of the year for 2014. It was hard to narrow it down to 10 choices because there were at least 3 or 4 more I wanted to include on the list. Some of you guys even emailed me and said, hey, where's the Paul Heyman Cena sucks rap, and where's the Halloween intro with the John Cena fans? I had to leave some out. I couldn't include all of them. As it is, we had 10 choices. So the vote ended at 10 a.m. this morning. The votes have been tabulated. 734 of you guys voted in the poll, which is awesome. I can tell you, I mean, for a living, I work with certain clients, you know, organizations that have a few thousand members. And one of the things that we'll do every now and then is we'll take polls of the membership because you never know what you may find out from those polls. You know, part of what I do for a living is pitching the media and trying to find things that are newsworthy. So you do these polls of the membership and you try to glean something from it that's newsworthy that you can put together in a press release and kind of pitch it to the media. Oh, this is an interesting fact. You know, when you hear on the news, the latest study from so-and-so found, you know, that sort of thing. And I can tell you that some of these organizations have a few thousand members, and you're lucky if you get 200 responses when you put a poll out. So the fact that we were able to get well over 700 votes, 734 to be exact, before the deadline is awesome. So thank you to everybody who voted and participated. The vote was spread out because there were 10 choices, and really every single option on this list was shown some love by you guys, some more than others. But it was a horse race between two options in particular out of the 10. And because there were so many, it was so spread out. The winning intro, it didn't win with a majority 50% or anything like that. The winning intro actually won with 16% of the vote, 117 votes total. And I can tell you that between the winner and the runner-up, there was only a differential of 8 votes. 8 votes is what separated the winner from the runner-up. So without any further ado, as I cue up a little drum roll here, I will now play for you the winning sound-off intro of the year, according to you guys, for the year 2014.
We want to bring you a medical alert about a very popular antibiotic, Z-Pak.
Here's a Z-Pak, Phil. Fuck. I take the Z-Pak, I can't sleep. I take the Z-Pak, I shit my pants in the ring. Z-Pak, full-blown staph infection. Full-blown staph infection. Motherfucker, I've been on antibiotics since November.
Doc, give me Izzy Pack.
What the fuck?
Doctor, give me a Z-Pak from episode 358 of the Sound Off, one of the most recent Sound Offs. That was the winner. 16% of the vote, 117 votes, and I said there was only an 8-vote differential between first place and second place. Honorable mention has to go to Noah Mark. The Talking Solomonster doll from episode 357 earned 15% of the vote, came in second place with 109 votes, and rounding out the top three in third place with 12%, 87 votes total, was the Triple H Thug Rap from Sound Off episode 335. So big thank you to everybody who voted. Got to mention Audible. We are getting very close to the end of the year here. We have had an incredible year. Tons of people have signed up using our Audible link, audibletrial.com/Solomonster, not Audible Trail. I know, unfortunately, some people have misspelled the URL. When you do that, even if you sign up, it doesn't do us any good. So make sure you type it in the right way, audibletrial.com/Solomonster. We only have about 10 days left in the year, and we need about 6 more signups, and we hit another milestone in terms of the number of people signed up for the year. 6 more signups is all that we need. So if you have been waiting, if you have not used our URL to give the Audible service a try, I don't know what you're waiting for. Now's as good a time as any. You can sign up. You get to try out the Audible service free for 30 days. Browse around. Check out what kind of books they have. And you get one free audio book that you get to keep no matter what. Whether you stick with the trial, if you continue on with Audible, whatever you choose to do, you get one free audio book that belongs to you. There's tons of wrestling options. The new Chris Jericho book is up there. As I've mentioned before, I did a whole review of it on our YouTube channel. Stone Cold Steve Austin narrates his own book, The Stone Cold Truth. Terry Funk's book, More Than Just Hardcore, which otherwise goes for $24.95. You can get that book for free. I don't know why you would spend $25 on that, $31 on the new Jericho book. You can get it for free just by using our Audible link, audibletrial.com/Solomonster. They got the Walking Dead books up there. There's just tons of stuff. So if you've already cashed in and used your trial, tell friends, tell family, and if you haven't, now's as good a time as any. We just need a handful of more signups. We'll hit a big milestone for the year. So again, audibletrial.com/Solomonster. And I want to do some PayPal donations here. You guys have contributed quite a bit to this show throughout the year, so I want to just give a big thank you to everybody who has donated throughout the year and helps keep this thing going, and a big shout out for the donations this week. Here during the holiday season, always a good time to make a PayPal donation. A little over a week left in the year, so here's hoping we end on a high note. You can make a donation, by the way, on thesolomonster.com. You'll see the box on the right-hand side, or you can just use thesolomonster@gmail.com as the email address to donate if you want to do it that way. Shout-outs for these awesome folks: The Reflection of Perfection, Abraham Lara, Demolition Man, Donovan McIntosh, Masterpiece, Matthew Barnes, Daniel Concannon, Illustrious Ilka Mantir, Man Up, Manuel Alcantara, The Dark Serpent, Derek Gibbs, and Orlando the Commando Garcia. Love that name. I also want to give a shout-out to Hardcore Trent, who I know is listening. I hope you're enjoying your Sound Off shirt this Christmas. Speaking of which, you can buy a shirt in our Pro Wrestling Tees store, prowrestlingtees.com/Solomonster Sounds Off. We've only had our store up since the beginning of September, so about 3 months now, and it's been one hell of a 3 months. And I think we've made it very clear to the folks over at prowrestlingtees.com that the Sound Off fans mean business. There's a lot of shirts out there from this podcast that are all over the place, all over the country, all over the world. You've seen them, people going to shows with them, and it's really cool to see. So pick up a shirt, prowrestlingtees.com/Solomonster Sounds Off. There is more coming very early in the new year, so that's something to look forward to. Yoshitatsu is going through a tough time right now. Apparently that neck injury he suffered on the Styles Clash was worse than I thought. He's still in a hospital with his neck fractured in two places, which just sounds like no fun. At least as of last week, he still had a halo screwed into his head. Again, I didn't realize how serious this was. Guy's got a halo screwed into his skull. It's possible he may never wrestle again. I mean, who's to say? That's a pretty serious neck injury. I'm sure he'll try to come back, but who's to say if he'll be able to or not? He was so depressed at one point, he tweeted, "I want to die," which is never a good thing. Looks like he's starting to get better slowly but surely based on some more recent tweets he's posted. But you know what? Send him some words of encouragement. It sounds like he could really use that right now. Hit him up on Twitter, @YoshitatsuISM. @YoshitatsuISM is his Twitter handle. TLC was last weekend on pay-per-view, the final pay-per-view of the year for WWE. So coming off that great NXT TakeOver show, how would Vince McMahon try to top that show? Well, we go from a hologram at Hell in a Cell to an exploding television at TLC. That's how. I thought it was a good effort all around. These guys just killed themselves on this show. And it's one of the reasons why, TLC is not one of my favorite shows. I don't know what it is. Maybe that was more acceptable back in the day. But when I see these guys go out there in these random gimmick matches and just beat the hell out of each other, and Luke Harper almost broke his arm at one point on a dive, these guys were so just beaten and battered when it was all over. You know, it's one thing to have a TLC match in the main event or have the top two matches on the card maybe as gimmick matches, but to just throw all of these random matches out there up and down the card just for the sake of having a stipulation to me is stupid. You know, it's just dumb, and it doesn't appeal to me. Maybe I'm out of the target demographic here. I don't know. But TLC, you know, it was still only the third best show of the week behind Ring of Honor Final Battle. and the NXT TakeOver show. And when I said that on Twitter, some of you guys actually threw Lucha Underground with that ladder match that they had the week before, and PWG in there as well, which would make this the fifth best show of the week. Just to run through the card really quickly, because, you know, TLC's old news by now, but Dolph Ziggler, Luke Harper opening the show in that ladder match, Ziggler winning the Intercontinental title for the fourth time in his hometown of Cleveland. These guys killed each other. They bled. I don't know how they're still up and walking. I don't know how they were on the show wrestling the next night. It's beyond my comprehension. Like I said, Harper nearly broke his arm. Ziggler bled. Harper bled from the arm. Huge pop for the finish. Big reaction. Nothing could top this for the rest of the night. And frankly, hindsight being 20/20, the last time Ziggler headlined a TLC show was also in a ladder match in Brooklyn, and the place came unglued when he won. This wasn't positioned as a main event going into the show, but they probably should have put these two on last. And I know that sounds crazy, because why would you put a Luke Harper-Dolph Ziggler IC title match in the main event? I know why they didn't do it, but just looking back, I think had that match gone on last, especially in Ziggler's hometown, I think it would have gotten a main event level reaction. I don't think people would have walked out on it. I don't think people would have sat on their hands. It probably is the only match on the card you could have put in that main event spot and not had it die to death based on crowd reaction. I think the crowd would have been into it no matter what, but instead they opened the show with it, and it was pretty much all downhill from there. Usos beating Miz and Mizdow by DQ, lame-ass finish to the match. Mizdow was fantastic as always. The only drawback is that every match that the champions are in are going to be comedy matches because of Mizdow. And I love the stuff Mizdow is doing, but that's just the nature of how it's going to be from now on, as long as those two have the belts. Big Show beat Eric Rowan in a stairs match, which was pinfall or submission only, but you get to use the stairs. So exactly the kind of stipulation I was hoping it wasn't, because it's stupid. You get to use the stairs in every match, so the whole thing was dumb. I give props to both of these guys for taking the abuse that they did. I cringed when Big Show didn't roll out of the way in time and took that hit to his hip. I mean, man, you know, a guy that big at his age, a giant, okay, at 40 years old or whatever he is now, 41, it's pretty incredible he's still in the shape that he's in and that he's able to go out there and do what he does. And I just don't think he should be taking bumps like that like he did in this match. Because if he does, you know, he's not going to be around much longer. And I know there's a lot of people who are, oh, great, you know, let's get rid of the Big Show. But, you know, I don't want to see this guy hurt like that. So that sucked. I didn't like the match. But it wasn't as bad as I thought it might be. It wasn't a complete catastrophe or anything like that. You know, the dumb stipulation hurt more than it helped. That's really what it was. John Cena and Seth Rollins in a tables match. Lots of interference from J&J Security. Cena puts Rollins through a table at one point, but the referee was down. He didn't see it, so the match continued until both men fell through two tables that were set up next to one another outside the ring. They did the deal where multiple referees come out and declare each man the winner. This was incredibly dumb. If the referees were so quick to come out and help render a decision when both guys went through the tables, where were they 5 minutes earlier when John Cena put Rollins through the table and had the match won? Why wouldn't they tell the other referee what happened? And don't tell me, well, you know, wrestling, because that's no excuse. It's just dumb. So they restarted the match. Big Show came down to chokeslam John Cena through a table, only to be saved by Roman Reigns' music. Because when the music plays, you got to stop whatever you're doing. That is one of the goofier things in wrestling. Yeah, I'm okay with playing somebody's music, but the idea that as soon as the music hits, like whatever you're about to do, you're rendered incapable of doing it. It's like at Survivor Series when the referee, Triple H had the referee to start counting. Rollins had the pin on Ziggler. And he counted one, and then Sting's music hit. And it's like, why is the referee not counting? Why did he stop? Why wouldn't Triple H be like, fuck it, you count those next two. Like, it doesn't make sense. But anyway, but this was even dumber. I mean, you could put some things aside by saying, well, it's wrestling, you got to suspend your disbelief. This, what they did here, was just dumb. They clearly did not think this through, or they just didn't care. So Roman Reigns comes out, he comes through the crowd, monster reaction for him, he throws some Superman punches and spears Big Show through a table. John Cena gives an attitude adjustment to Rollins through the table, he wins, he will meet the Beast at the Royal Rumble. Yay, I guess. Whatever. Nikki Bella beat AJ Lee to retain her Divas title. For those of you like me, shaking your head at the lazy booking of this Bella storyline, thinking maybe there's still a payoff to be had, maybe Brie is faking her love for her sister and might turn on her and cost her the championship. They did a promo before this match where Brie said, blood is thicker than water. And so that's why she's back by her sister's side. And then during the match, she actually helped Nikki. She saved Nikki's title at one point by putting her foot on the rope when AJ had the match won. So if they end up doing the swerve now, it won't make any sense. Which means expect a swerve soon. She got booted from ringside, Brie did, and that allowed Nikki to use hairspray in AJ's face and the rack attack for the win. Ryback and Kane in the chairs match, just an unnecessary match that went far too long. Ryback won. Rusev beating Jack Swagger with the accolade by ref stoppage is something we've seen a gazillion times before. Swagger has let his country down once again. He should be deported at this point. And then we had the main event. I was really happy to see Dean Ambrose get that main event. Ambrose and Wyatt both, because those are two guys, you know, two young guys that are going to be around for a long time. And we saw Dean Ambrose get the main event spot in October. We did not see him in the main event last month, but we did see Rollins and Ziggler, and I like what they did there. So to see Ambrose back in the main event again in December was an encouraging sign, although I hate to complain about it, but obviously when you look back on the card, probably not the right spot to put those two guys in. But going in, I was very happy for the guy. It just didn't work. The match just didn't work. They took a lot of abuse. Ambrose kept climbing onto ladders that were taller and taller to do dives on Wyatt through a table. The funniest thing to me was when he noticed the giant ladders back by the stage. And so Ambrose goes all the way down there, and he grabs one ladder. But there's still one that's even bigger than that, and people are kind of, they start booing him because they were hoping he was going to grab the really, like, 30-foot tall ladder. And Ambrose just goes, it's too heavy, I can't carry it. Which is true. I mean, hey, at least he's being honest. But that was that got him some boos. There was nothing wrong with the match. I mean, I enjoyed it for what it was. It just never really clicked for me. It wasn't that blow-away effort I was expecting, I think, because we were just so fatigued. I mean, we had just seen a tables match, and a chairs match, and a stairs match, and a ladder match. And now we see a match that's supposed to have all of these elements combined, and it's like we've already seen it. It's been done for the last 2.5 hours. At some point, you get tired of seeing it. And that finish, boy, let me tell you, that finish was lame as hell. Reminded me of the King of the Ring in 1993 when they did that finish in the Hogan-Yokozuna match, which they also, by the way, never bothered to explain. I had always heard that it was Jim Cornette under the disguise of that photographer with the exploding camera, but I don't know for sure. Could have been Harvey Whippleman. He's another name I've heard floated around, but they never bothered to follow up on that. That was kind of a dropped storyline and was pretty stupid, and this was equally stupid. You had Ambrose going to use a flat panel monitor that just so happened to be laying under the ring, which begs the question, if they have nice HD flat panel monitors sitting under the ring, maybe as a backup, let's say if the announce table is destroyed, why are the announcers still stuck using those 1995 monitors? Those are literally right out of 1995. So why there was a flat panel under the ring, I have no idea. But he grabbed it. He went to go use it on Wyatt in the ring, and it's so goofy. He goes to use it, and he stops because they're still wired, and the wires don't reach that far. So he goes back, and instead of unplugging them, he just tries again. And on the second time, we see sparks fly. It explodes in his face. The fact that he couldn't see that the TV monitor wouldn't reach, you know, and yet he went back to use it again. I mean, a guy that you're positioning as a top babyface should never be made to look like an idiot. And that's exactly what Ambrose looked like here. He looked like an idiot. So in the end, Bray Wyatt hits Sister Abigail, gets the pin. Shocked the hell out of me, because I thought for sure Ambrose was getting a win here. Not that the feud was going to end, but he's overdue for a big win on pay-per-view. The stats on him are eerily similar to that of Ryback a couple of years ago, who couldn't win a pay-per-view match to save his life. Ambrose has not had a lot of luck on pay-per-view. But you know what? On the flip side, Bray Wyatt did get the win. And Bray Wyatt is another young guy, another newish guy, who's going to be around for a long time. And he also has not had very many big wins on pay-per-view in recent months. So It wasn't such a good night for Ambrose. It was a good night for Wyatt. And if the rumors are to be believed, they're priming Bray Wyatt for a match with The Undertaker at WrestleMania. I've seen that reported. That's a match that may have worked in the past. But the more I see of Bray and the character, putting him together with The Undertaker at this stage of Undertaker's career, that sounds ungodly boring to me. I'm sorry. I like Wyatt. I do like the guy. I'm not going to sit here and say that a match between Sting and The Undertaker is going to light the world on fire. You know, I'm sorry, the Vigilante Sting. That's apparently the new doctrine. We can't just call him Sting anymore. He's now the Vigilante Sting. Got to get it right. Anyway, if the alternative is Bray Wyatt and a broken down Undertaker, I'd rather they just do Sting and Undertaker and save Triple H for somebody else. You know, if Undertaker comes back, honestly, looking at those recent photos of him that popped up online, looks like Mike from Breaking Bad, I would be perfectly happy for him to just stay at home and enjoy his retirement and never wrestle another match again after some of those photos that we've seen of him recently. He is the oldest 49-year-old I have ever seen. He gave his body to wrestling, and that's what happens when you go through the kind of wars that he has and the kind of injuries that he's had over the years. And he's a big guy. I mean, he's a very big guy, 6'10", to be having all sorts of injuries like that, knee injuries, shoulder injuries, torn biceps and torn pecs and everything else that this guy has gone through. He's gone through some wars, and so that's the end result. You know, he gave himself to the wrestling business, and that's why I'd be happy for him to just never wrestle another match again. He deserves time to just enjoy life now with his wife, remember, who used to love life. Remember the old Michelle McCool vignettes? Talk about corny. Those old vignettes they used to air for Michelle McCool on SmackDown. Michelle McCool is loving life. Well, guess what? It's time for The Undertaker to love life, too. Ultimately, it's his decision. Him and Vince McMahon are going to make that decision if he comes back. I know the WrestleMania 31 trucks have been spotted with Undertaker on the decal on the side. And yeah, chances are they wouldn't put him on there unless they had a sense that he might come back and wrestle another match. So he might. But you want to know what? I was thinking about this. You want to know the best role for Undertaker, in my opinion, at WrestleMania, because I do think he should be on the show in some way, whether he wrestles or not. Just because he's on the show doesn't mean he has to wrestle. They could do the Sting-Triple H match, have Sting outnumbered, ref bump at one point, you know, Triple H's goons are out there, J&J, whatever. Hit the gong, lights go out, hit the gong, lights come back on, and there's The Undertaker, standing in the middle of the ring. People going crazy. He throws some fists, a couple of choke slams, maybe a tombstone, helps Sting to victory. And then we get a stare down after the match. Both guys end up shaking hands. And we get that big, iconic Mania moment with Sting and Undertaker together in the ring, showing respect to one another. There doesn't have to be a match. We get a big moment. Taker doesn't have to physically wreck himself for the next 6 months. That'd be my idea in a perfect world. If he does wrestle, though, and they don't do the Sting match, and Bray Wyatt is the alternative, I think it's a big mistake. That's where no longer having the streak really hurts. You know, with Sting, you don't need the streak. I see people saying, well, they can't do the Sting match anyway because there's no streak. I've said this before. You don't need the streak in an Undertaker-Sting match. If they have a match, you take the two old dudes, and you make it a retirement match. And now you have an attraction, because people know going into it, this is it. This is it. No more wondering, will The Undertaker wrestle again? This is it. They make it very clear going in. This will be the final match for both guys. And both guys want to go out a winner at WrestleMania. Undertaker's coming off his first loss, right? He's going to be due for a win. You're going to have plenty of people out there who say, well, you know, this is Sting's one and only WWE match. Surely Sting did not sign just to lose, although I'm sure he absolutely would lose, because Undertaker, to me, would be the obvious winner in that match. But there's plenty of people out there who I'm sure would just figure that, well, Sting's going to win because there's no more streak, right? And it's his only match, so Sting's going to win. So that to me is the real attraction if you wanted to do it. But I don't know how solid the Wyatt rumors are. You know, it was around this time last year that it was reported in some of the newsletters and on some of the more reputable websites that WWE was planning a Bray Wyatt versus John Cena match, and I was skeptical. I mean, a lot of people heard that and were like, that's bullshit. There's no way. But you know what? They were right. And we ended up getting John Cena and Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania, so they could very well be right about this one, too. I don't have any interest in seeing it if it's true, but that could be the plan going into WrestleMania. Before we get into Raw, I want to spend some time. There's going to be more analysis than review on this show this week. I want to spend some more time talking about two things. Dolph Ziggler and the New Day. And we'll start with Ziggler first. And this will be a good one for Trax, too, if he picks it up. What a month this guy has had. They shocked the hell out of me by having him overcome the odds at Survivor Series and be the sole survivor on Team Cena. Then he's on Raw the next night, teaming with Cena in the main event. He stole the show with Luke Harper at TLC. Easily the best match of the night. Won the Intercontinental title back to a big hometown pop. He got a pinfall win over Seth Rollins on the live SmackDown that they had this week, which was a really good match. Those two have great chemistry together. I could watch Rollins and Ziggler in the ring all day long. Rolling Stone just named him WWE Wrestler of the Year for 2014, so he's been getting some press. It's sad that I have to mentally stop myself from giving WWE too much credit because of all the start and stop pushes we've seen with this guy now for years. But I will give them credit. It seems like somebody there finally recognized what they have with this guy, whatever the reason, whether it was injuries or whatever. Maybe if Roman Reigns doesn't get hurt or Daniel Bryan is back by now, he's not getting this push. But he is, and I'm happy to see it. And for a guy who can be his own worst enemy when it comes to his mouth, as Cesaro, unfortunately, is finding out right now. Somebody asked me the other day, where's Cesaro? Well, he was on Superstars this week. He actually won a match. He's apparently formed a new team with Tyson Kidd, which is an idea that I can definitely get behind. And according to Justin in our Facebook group, that win, the Cesaro Kidd win on Superstars this week, ended a 27-match losing streak that Cesaro has had going for him. 27 matches. That coincidentally happened to correspond to his comments about people being bored of John Cena versus Randy Orton for the 500th time in that interview he did with that website back, I guess it would have been in October. And wouldn't you know it, he loses two straight falls to Dolph Ziggler in that 2 out of 3 falls IC title match at Hell in a Cell, and he's just been in purgatory ever since. Funny how that works. Remember what Uncle Vince said, don't piss anybody off. Ziggler seems to finally have overcome all of that. He's getting the most serious push that I've seen him get maybe ever, and that includes winning the World Heavyweight title the night after WrestleMania last year, which was a great moment, but never went anywhere. And it was one of the most lackluster title reigns in history. He got hurt with the concussion. He came back, I think his first match back, he lost the belt to Alberto Del Rio. So yeah, he won the world title, you know, big whoop. It didn't really amount to anything. And he had it taken away from him pretty much right away. So this probably is the most serious push I've ever seen the guy get in WWE. Now, for the first time, it really feels like this guy is on the verge of becoming a breakout star, which sounds weird to me when I say that, given that he's been around for almost a decade now. I mean, think about that. Go back to when he was Chavo's caddy and the Spirit Squad. I mean, we're talking 2005, 2006. That's almost 10 years this guy has been around for. But he's never felt to me as close to being a truly top guy than he does right now in these last few weeks. He just needs that little extra push to get there. And look, 10 years or not, what did Steve Austin used to say? It took him 8 years of busting his ass to get to the top. Some guys, it takes a little bit longer than others. He could get there. He still could get there. The question is, will he? What can they do with this guy heading into WrestleMania season to really cement him as a main event player? Because with Roman Reigns getting the big push as the next big babyface, and John Cena still hanging around, Daniel Bryan may be on his way back, Dean Ambrose is right there with those guys, Randy Orton, he's coming back soon, probably as a babyface or a tweener. Where does Dolph Ziggler fit in? It's a very crowded field all of a sudden when you think of it like that. Where does this guy fit in? Be very easy for him to get lost in the shuffle. So one of the mailbag questions I got this week was from Ryan in Adelaide, Australia. And I want to do his question now because it's about Dolph Ziggler and it's relevant to the question that I just asked. He says, I see people online saying that Dolph Ziggler should win the Royal Rumble. I think him winning the Rumble would be hard to believe after all the losing he's done the last few years. But I think that Ziggler could potentially have a good feud with Triple H. Triple H could come through the crowd at the Rumble, screw Ziggler because he did win the Survivor Series match, which ousted the Authority. And Ziggler could ask John Cena to give Triple H his job back because he wants to fight him, depending on who Sting is wrestling at WrestleMania. Would you like this feud? I think that's a really intriguing idea. I had not thought of Triple H and Dolph Ziggler, especially after that promo that Triple H cut on him that one time on Raw, and Ziggler being the one to pin Kane, he pinned Harper, then he pinned Rollins, he ousted the Authority with Sting's help, of course, at Survivor Series. The seeds have been planted if they want to go in that direction. I've been thinking about how they can keep Ziggler's momentum going and who might be a good opponent for him at WrestleMania, and I keep coming back to John Cena, but you know, given how guys sometimes end up coming out of a feud with John Cena, like Dolph Ziggler did after TLC in 2012, I can use Dolph Ziggler himself as Exhibit A of what happens sometimes after you feud with John Cena. I'm a little afraid of that. If you look at Ziggler and Triple H, it's a high-profile match for the guy, for Ziggler. And if Undertaker insists on coming back for one more match, it frees him up for Sting. And I just talked about this a few minutes ago. But if he insists on coming back, and I would prefer that he not come back and still make an appearance at WrestleMania and have a moment with Sting but not actually wrestle the guy. But I will take Undertaker and Sting over Undertaker and Bray Wyatt any day of the week at this stage of the game. So if the guy insists on coming back and Vince has him back for one more match, at least one more match, then you put Ziggler together with Triple H. Like I said, that frees up Sting for a big match with The Undertaker, however the match may turn out. I would absolutely get behind a Dolph Ziggler versus Triple H match with Ziggler getting a big win. I don't know that he has to really convince John Cena to reinstate the Authority, though. I mean, I thought the storyline was that Triple H and Stephanie are still working for the company. They just don't have any power over the roster anymore. Triple H could still wrestle, as far as I know. He could still come out and eliminate Ziggler from the Royal Rumble match. Ziggler would have to drop the Intercontinental title before then, because there's no way Triple H is wrestling the Intercontinental champion at WrestleMania. But absolutely, I like the idea a lot. And the more I think about WrestleMania, the more I think John Cena is defending the title against Roman Reigns. You know, this whole last match ever business with John Cena and Brock Lesnar, that's how they're hyping the commercials now for the next pay-per-view. Lesnar dominated him at SummerSlam in ways that we've never seen John Cena dominated before. They come right back with the rematch. John Cena has victory in hand until he got screwed. I think they're giving Cena the big conquering win at the Royal Rumble. I really do. Especially if they think Brock Lesnar is as good as gone anyway after WrestleMania. They may not want to wait that long and have him as champion going into their biggest show of the year. And instead they do John Cena versus Roman Reigns, maybe a passing of the torch. And I think it was Seth Mates that I saw who suggested maybe Brock Lesnar instead having a match at WrestleMania, not for the title, against Daniel Bryan, because there's been a lot of rumors that Daniel Bryan may be back within 2 months. He may not need surgery. He's getting better. I hope it's true. I don't know if it is or not. If he's able to come back in time for Mania, he deserves to be in a high-profile match, maybe not the main event. Brock and Bryan, that's a match. I mean, shit, I was pitching that as the main event for SummerSlam this past year. Obviously, Bryan was hurt, and so they went with Cena instead, but I think that would have been a hell of a match. I still think it could be a hell of a match. But I'm torn on that, if only for this reason. I'm torn on the idea of Brock and Bryan as maybe the second or third match from the top, because I still would love for Brock Lesnar to go into that show with the belt. I'm not at all a fan of John Cena becoming a 16-time champion at the Royal Rumble. I don't want to see it. I think Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns is still a big-time fresh match. You know, two big dudes that have never been in the ring together going at it. Maybe you do Lesnar and Reigns, you stay the course, and you do John Cena instead against Rusev. You know, because where there are odds to be overcome, we know that John Cena will be there. And with Rusev, somebody will have to overcome this guy at some point, and I think we all know who it probably is going to be. It's inevitable. But I would say, you know, think about this. Here's another reason as to why Brock may not be going into Mania with the championship. They're going to want the champion to do press conferences. They're going to want the guy with the title to make media shots. I just don't see Brock doing all of that. He may do the initial big press conference, but after that, you think Brock Lesnar is going to be doing all this media for WWE, walking around with the belt? When he goes home, I'm sure he doesn't even take the belt with him. He's not doing all that stuff. This ain't UFC. Cena will. Cena does everything. He does everything they want him to do. So maybe that's your WrestleMania card right there. I mean, again, I'm throwing a lot of different options out here because it's still too early to tell. We don't know if Bryan's going to be back. We don't know if they're going to put the belt on Cena. And we don't know if Undertaker is coming back. It is still very early. Too early to predict exactly what that WrestleMania card is going to look like. I'm not even sure WWE knows what that WrestleMania card is fully going to look like just yet. They probably know, you know, one or two matches and that's it. But maybe that's your WrestleMania card right there. John Cena against Roman Reigns. Brock Lesnar against Daniel Bryan, assuming Bryan can make it back in time. Sting versus The Undertaker, if Undertaker has to have a match on that show. And Triple H versus Dolph Ziggler. And with Seth Rollins, you give him a match lower on the card, maybe with Randy Orton, because that issue is not resolved. Whenever Orton comes back, I'm sure the first person he'll be gunning for is the guy that put him out, Seth Rollins. And I could see them dragging that out for 2 or 3 months. You know, even if the WrestleMania match is like a rematch, you know, they can't wait that long to do the first match. They do it, and then they have a rematch in Mania. You can extend that feud into Mania, absolutely. So maybe that's the match you do with Seth Rollins. And you could save Rollins' Money in the Bank cash-in for after the John Cena-Roman Reigns match. We've never even seen an attempted cash-in of a Money in the Bank briefcase at WrestleMania after all these years. Never, not even once. The closest we ever came was Ken Kennedy, teasing it, and then the guy got hurt a month later, and they took it away from him. And you want to know something? I don't care what kind of countdown gimmick they had in mind for Anderson. I'm going to hold on to this for 1 year until WrestleMania the next year. This is WWE. Okay, they don't think that far ahead. Unless your name is John Cena or The Rock and they lock your match in a year early, believe me, that plan would have changed a million times. There was no way Kennedy was waiting until Mania the following year to cash in. So they've never done that before, let alone having somebody successfully cash in and win the championship there. I could see that. I could absolutely see that. You know, and that would actually be okay then if Rollins, who's been the MVP, I think he's been the superstar of the year in this company, if he's got a match lower on the card, even if he loses, you can have Orton beat him. It's okay if the idea is for him to come back out at the end and cash in and then win the championship. So I would throw that out to you. What do you guys think of that card? Cena Reigns, Brock and Bryan, Taker and Sting, Triple H and Dolph, Orton and Rollins, with Rollins cashing in at the end of the night, whether he's successful or not. The only thing with that lineup, the only thing with that plan is, in that scenario, Dean Ambrose and Bray Wyatt are the odd men out. I don't think you can extend that feud into Mania and do another Dean Ambrose-Bray Wyatt match, so what do you do with those guys? That I haven't really fully thought through, but let me know what you guys think of that card or where you might plug in Ambrose and Wyatt. Maybe you think they deserve to be higher up on the card. It's all speculation, but it's fun to speculate. Let me know what you think. Now, let's talk about the New Day, or more specifically, the problem with the New Day. Something is missing with these guys. So what is it? Somebody wrote into me, and I'm sorry I didn't put the person's name down, but they had written into me and mentioned something that JBL said on commentary. Maybe it was when Kofi was on commentary with him, and JBL was kind of pushing him on, are you hiding something? It was, and they took that to mean maybe it was a tease that there is some sort of mischievous thing going on with the New Day and things aren't as they seem. I hope, you know, I certainly hope so. I hope it's possible. Maybe they have something evil planned with these guys that has yet to play itself out. I mean, remember, I pitched the whole idea of giving them, and it was just a random idea. It wasn't anything I thought out or anything, but just giving them the rub by tagging with John Cena in some matches on TV and then turning on John Cena, maybe after being paid off by Paul Heyman as part of the build to the Lesnar-Cena match at the Royal Rumble. They kind of already did something similar with Seth Rollins last Monday and Heyman and Lesnar, but it was just an idea that I pitched to show that they never really were baby faces to begin with. But it's been a few weeks now. We kind of see what the act is going to be, and so far, it's been really disappointing. You know, not only that, the crowd in Detroit last Monday didn't even give these guys a chance out there. It was bad. And I heard they came out to a good reaction the next night on Main Event. Of course they did. I mean, they were probably the first match people saw all night, other than whatever the opening dark match was. They'll cheer for whoever they send out there. They'd cheer for me if they sent me out for the first match. They don't even know who the fuck I am. That doesn't mean much of anything, because they got a big reaction on Main Event. So what? I was thinking about why. You know, unless they do this big, elaborate turn with them in the next few weeks, why is this New Day thing destined to fail? Which it is. Why is it destined to fail? And it's part of a problem, I think, that is very much endemic, is a word for you, in WWE right now. It's the sign of a much bigger problem. Instead of just complaining about it, I figured let's at least try to get to the heart of what's going on here and what can be done to try to fix it, because I'd like to see this New Day thing work. I'd like to see at least one, better yet, even more than one of the members of the New Day come out of this a bigger star than they were going into it. I would argue a big part of it, a big part of the problem here, is that we know very little about these guys and have no connection to them whatsoever. Xavier Woods, okay, he graduated college with 2 degrees. I don't think people really know that. They keep hearing about the PhD stuff, which is true. He got his master's. Now he's working on his PhD. They have mentioned that on commentary before. Boy, do they love to mention that. Makes them look good. But we don't know anything else about the guy beyond that. I mean, I know that he used to be Consequences Creed and TNA. What does the average WWE fan really know about Xavier Woods? You know, he was apparently R-Truth's friend when he first came in, but he hasn't associated with R-Truth since. Did they have a falling out? You know, why isn't R-Truth part of the New Day? Kofi Kingston. Kofi Kingston, we know he was born in Ghana. Although at one point we were supposed to believe, I guess, he was born in Jamaica. But he was born in Ghana, came to this country very young, so he grew up here. He did the Jamaican thing at first before he dropped the accent, which, you know, they could always bring it up and just poke fun at it and chalk it up to him trying to stand out and make a name for himself. Beyond those things, what do we really know about Kofi Kingston? He debuted in ECW back in 08. It's going to be 7 years that this guy has been on television. And I don't know fuck all about this guy, other than he plays video games and he used to ride on CM Punk's bus. They may or may not still be friends. That's it. They started to get behind the guy in 2009, and then he pissed off Randy Orton, and he never got to that same level again after that. Remember, don't piss anybody off. He violated the cardinal rule. 7 years. 7 years. I could have broken a mirror, and my bad luck would be over by now. 7 years, and I know nothing about this guy. He's the guy who flies around. So what? Lots of guys fly around. I watch NXT every week. That's all people do is fly around. I have no personal connection to the guy. He seems like a nice enough guy, but I don't know anything about him. Big E, okay? Big E, don't call me Langston. High school wrestling champion, played football, got into powerlifting. I think they actually brought up his powerlifting stuff. I was shocked on the pre-show match at the TLC show. You know, the dude broke records, national records in powerlifting as a super heavyweight. I think Michael Cole even brought that up. So how did the guy get into wrestling? Why? Why did he get into WWE? What made him come to WWE? Why not talk about his run on NXT? With all the publicity that NXT's been getting of late, although you would never know if you watch Raw, they didn't say word one about that TakeOver show on Monday night, 3 fucking hours, and never even showed, I don't think, a commercial or any kind of video package about it. But for all the publicity that NXT has been getting, it's not a secret anymore. People know about it. People are into it. I don't know why you wouldn't want to draw more attention to it as a way to entice new people to sign up for the network and see what's going on. You know, to show people that the stars of tomorrow, you could find them right now on the WWE Network. And Big E is a former NXT champion. As a matter of fact, he beat Seth Rollins for the title, Mr. Money in the Bank. Speaking of his time on NXT, I still can't figure out for the life of me why they never brought his 5-count gimmick to the main roster. I mean, the thing was over. It would get over on TV without a doubt. 110% that thing would get over if they tried that on the main roster with him. Okay, Big E, he's a charismatic guy. He's a funny guy. He's got personality. He also apparently has a gland problem. The dude sweats too much. That's his new gimmick. That's the great new gimmick they've come up with for Big E. I'm sorry. Big E will never be the sweaty guy on the roster so long as Brock Lesnar is under contract. I'm surprised John Cena didn't drown at SummerSlam. It's disgusting. But he sweats too much. That's the best they could come up with for this guy. That's their great new idea for him. They got Kofi Kingston on commentary talking about how much he sweats. That's why they go out there and they get the kind of reaction they did in Detroit on Monday night. It's been a few weeks now. We've seen nothing beyond those initial church vignettes to help explain why we should care about these guys at all. What is so special about them now that we didn't already know about them all the other years that we've seen them on television? I mean, Xavier hasn't been around for that long, but Kofi's been around for 7 years. Big E's been around now for a while. What do we know about them now that we didn't know before? What is a new day, anyway? What does that even mean? It's more like Groundhog Day to me. They walk out there, they're dressed like the Blue World Order, doing the whole stereotypical dancing black man gimmick that WWE loves so much, and they're just a bunch of happy guys. And you can say, well, you know, if they came in as heels, Solomonster, if they were like the Nation of Domination, the angry black man thing's been done before too. Yes, it has been. In WWE, they've done that before too, but at least had they followed through on what the original plan appeared to be, when Xavier Woods first showed up that one time on Raw in the white suit with the glass, I think he was wearing glasses, talking about how they're not going to take crap from anybody anymore. And if they went in a darker direction with these guys, they were angry and pissed off about being held down and being held back. At least they would have a clear motivation. These guys are angry because they want to tear ass through the roster. They're tired of being a joke. They're tired of being an afterthought. Kofi Kingston, 7 years on the roster. Can you imagine if they let him play heel and turned him loose in a promo on Raw where he got to vent all of his frustration? I've said for years, it's time we got to see heel Kofi. If he can't carry it, then he can't carry it. But give the guy a chance. Give him some new threads, a new attitude. That can make all the difference in the world. He's a company guy. I mean, he'll fill whatever role they need him to. When I interviewed him for the Sound Off over WrestleMania weekend in Miami a few years ago, I asked him, I said, do you prefer being a single or a tag team guy? And he basically said, whatever they need before. That was his answer. Just a strict company answer. I'm here to contribute to the team in any way they need me for. They want me to team up with Evan Bourne and be Air Boom, then that's what I'm going to do. So he's not a guy that's going to make waves. But you got to know that this guy is probably just dying to take a stab at the heel thing. He's been doing the smiling, happy babyface thing his entire career so far. It's something that's really lacking with these characters on the main roster these days. There's no depth to the characters. There's no layers to the characters. They're one-dimensional. And now there are some exceptions. They're not all like that. You know, to the kids, John Cena is their hero who never gives up. He's what Hogan was to a previous generation. Daniel Bryan was a great underdog. You could get behind him. Sami Zayn on NXT is the same way. Bayley on NXT for the women wrestlers is another one. You know, when she lost, it was either in one of her matches with Charlotte or Sasha Banks. And on the post show, I wish I could remember what show it was, Renee Young was interviewing Bayley at ringside after her loss. And she had tears in her eyes because her mom was there, and she felt like she let her mom down and everybody else down. You just felt so badly for this girl. Most of the characters on the main roster, I couldn't care less if they win or lose. Mizdow, Damian Mizdow, is maybe the only character right now I can really get behind. Ziggler may be another one just because I want to see the guy succeed. But even Dolph Ziggler, he's the show-off. That's all we know about the guy. He used to be a caddy and a male cheerleader. Now he's the show-off. But Mizdow is great. And when Miz bullies him around, it kind of pisses you off. And when the day comes that Mizdow stands up for himself, the place is going to go bonkers. But Damian Mizdow is not a money character. It's a comedy character with a short shelf life. And it's sad that most weeks it feels like he's the only thing worth watching on that show. I'm not saying I don't like anybody on the roster other than him. That's not what I'm saying. I like plenty of people on that roster. Tyson Kidd is another one. But there's a difference between liking somebody and actually caring about the character and what happens to them. And what I'm saying is they've done a poor job of giving people a reason to care about these people and thinking, man, that guy's segment is on. I'm not going to miss that. I'm definitely going to tune in for that. if I watch nothing else, I'm going to make time for that guy's segment. And I think that's the biggest problem I have with the New Day. I just don't care. You know, give me a reason to care about these guys. You can't just repackage them and trot them out there and think that all of a sudden people are going to cheer for them. Now they're stars. It doesn't work that way. We saw this in the interview Vince McMahon did with Steve Austin. And he admitted, I don't have all the answers. No shit. Nobody does. Nobody has all the answers. Isn't that why you hired those 26 writers? What the hell are you paying these people for? And if they are coming up with great ideas, and I'm sure some of them are, got 26 people, they can't all be coming up with shitty ideas, and you're just not listening to them, again, I ask, why are you paying them? What are you paying them for? You've got JBL out there doing the New Day dance, whatever the fuck that is. Oh yeah, that'll do wonders for these guys. Which actually brings me to another point. I'm actually happy I brought up the announcers. You know what else doesn't help these guys? The announcing. I missed the pre-show match at TLC where they wrestled the Dust Brothers. I went back after the fact and I watched it. And not only did the Three Stooges do nothing to help the New Day, Michael Cole referred to Stardust at one point as a goof. I think it was when he came out. Which may well be true. I mean, let's be honest. It is kind of a goofy character. But who is Michael Cole to call somebody else a goof? And then later in the match, JBL's talking about how much Stardust looks like the Great Gazoo from the Flintstones, which resulted in a 5-minute conversation about the Great Gazoo. Cartoon characters talking about other cartoon characters. What is the point of the commentary? That's what I want to know. It's not entertaining, so it can't be for us. It's not informative, and it does nothing to help the talent, so it can't be for them. I assume it's just being done for them to amuse themselves. And I honestly don't know who to blame for it. I mean, are these guys together just that bad? Because Michael Cole can be very good when he wants to be. He's had some very good calls in his career. He's not a bad announcer. I mean, are these three just really no good together? Or is it Vince McMahon? I mean, I would really want to know. I can honestly say that the announcing right now in WWE, and I'm not counting NXT in this, the announcing right now is at an all-time low. It's as bad as I can ever remember it being. The announcing sucks. So that doesn't help the New Day either. And right now, they can use all the help that they can get. Raw, on Monday night, could also use some help. Did one of its lowest non-holiday numbers since 1997. 3.5 million viewers. And that was the day after a pay-per-view, where the number is usually up and there's interest coming out of the show. The night after Survivor Series, because of Sting, they did a huge number. That opening segment, the night after Sting debuted, did almost 5 million viewers. And that was all interest from the Sting debut, and then he wasn't there, and people tuned out. We're talking about an overall number nearly 2 million viewers less than what they had for that segment less than a month earlier. So the people are out there. The wrestling fans, casual fans, whatever, they're out there. They're just not interested in what WWE is giving them right now. And they did that number with their biggest draw, John Cena, in the main event in a cage match on this show. Show fell each of the 3 hours. By the way, there was a guy with a very visible sign on this show that read, "John Cena, turn heel, you douche." In the front, it wasn't in the front row, but it was in the first few rows. I died when I saw it. I have no idea how he was able to sneak that into the building, but I tip my cap to that guy. Chris Jericho was the guest GM for the night. By the fourth segment he was in, I was completely sick of seeing him. He was out there for, and Jericho's great, I like Jericho, but he was out there. They did the obligatory opening 30-minute segment, which apparently is the new Raw formula. We've got to kill 3 hours, so let's just kill the first 30 minutes by doing nothing but talking. So Jericho was out there for the whole thing, and then he was in a backstage segment with Fandango, and then he came back out again for a highlight reel, and then he came back out again for a match that never happened. He was all over the place to the point that I was just tired of seeing him. Look at how they use Jericho here, and look at how they use Brock Lesnar, and you see why Brock still means something, and Jericho doesn't when he shows up. And it's not Jericho's fault. It's the booking of Jericho on the show. He just went along with it, and I just don't think it did him any favors. The whole thing was to set up a Paul Heyman-Chris Jericho match. Because Heyman came out, and Seth Rollins came out, and again, Rollins was put in a cage match main event with Cena. Comments were made, and unfortunately, poor Paul Heyman was on the receiving end of being put in a match on this show with Chris Jericho that was going to have one of three stipulations. And the stipulations were, that the fans could vote on, by the way, stipulations were extreme rules, no holds barred, or street fight. As if they couldn't make it any clearer what they wanted you to pick. Not that the match actually happened anyway, the match never did take place, but if you needed any further proof that WWE thinks its audience is stupid, there it is. Heyman came out for the match, he tried to talk his way out of it, it was a swerve, he brought out Brock Lesnar, and I don't care what you think of Brock Lesnar, what you think of his title reign so far, when Brock Lesnar's music hit, when that guitar riff hits and he comes out, there is a vibe that nobody else on the roster can bring to the table, and if he leaves this company at the end of his contract, if he does go to UFC or Bellator or wherever the hell he ends up, it's going to be a big loss for WWE, because even those handful of times he's on television, it feels like, oh shit, something bad is about to happen. That is why Brock Lesnar is such a valuable thing. He's real. He's real. You know what I mean? I mean, when I talked about the New Day a few minutes ago, what do we know about those guys? What do we know about Kofi? What do we really know about Big E? We know that Brock Lesnar is a badass SOB, and when he comes out, you better be somewhere else. We know that Brock Lesnar went to the UFC and became champion. He's a legit fighter. I mean, we know a lot of things about Brock Lesnar. That's why he's a scary dude. He's real. He's the only real guy on that whole roster. And they lose him, like I said, I mean, maybe it's not worth the money they're paying him, but that's going to be a big loss. But he comes out, he circles the ring like a shark circling its prey, he gets in there. He looked a lot smaller, too. I'm sure by the time the Rumble rolls around, he'll be gigantic, but he actually looks smaller on the show. And Jericho threw some forearms that Brock basically no-sold, and I think Brock shoved them back into the ropes. Jericho comes off, he goes for the code breaker, and Brock Lesnar did what any rational person would do in a real fight, which is just not go down for the move. So Jericho falls down, he looks up at Brock like, uh-oh, like he had this look of sheer terror on his face that was so perfect. It was so the best thing I've seen Jericho do in ages. And Brock picks him up on his shoulders, F5, leaves him laying. This is exactly what it needed to be, because Jericho was in for a one-time appearance. Brock is the champion. I had no problem with him doing this at all. I thought this was probably, if not the best, one of the best parts of the entire show. So we never actually got a match here, which begs the question, why even bother doing that stupid deal where every stipulation is the same? The whole thing is just stupid. The other thing Jericho was involved in was a highlight reel segment with Lana and Rusev. The whole point of this was to set up a feud with Ryback. Ryback came out at the end. Rusev backed off. I like this. Rusev and Ryback is a fresh feud. It's probably legitimately the biggest dude he's been up against so far. Actually, no, I take that back. He's been in there with Big Show. He's been in there with Mark Henry. It tells you how much I remember about what Rusev has done. He has been in there with bigger guys, but Ryback is also big. You know, he's a big, jacked-up, scary dude. I wouldn't want to be in the ring with him, especially after listening to CM Punk talk about his experiences. I would not want to be in the ring with Ryback. But Ryback and Rusev, I think, could be a fun match. We had a tag team match with Big Show and Luke Harper beating Eric Rowan and Dolph Ziggler when Big Show KO'd Rowan with the punch. Second night in a row that he beat Eric Rowan, which does make sense because it looks like it was all done to help make Roman look strong. Looks like Big Show and Roman Reigns is up next, maybe at the Royal Rumble, if they can wait that long. Reigns came out to kill Fandango in a segment on the show, and then before he could cut his promo, he had the microphone up to his mouth, and before he could say anything, Big Show, his music hit, which was a smart move on WWE's part, the way they did that. Then he told Big Show if he comes to the ring, he'd punch him in the mouth. Big Show ignored this threat. He ate a Superman punch for his troubles. I believe Big Show mouthed somewhere in here that Reigns punches like a bitch, to which Roman Reigns responded, "Well, you look like a bitch." This was not on the mic, but you could clearly see what they were saying. I like this. I think it did make Roman look strong. This was a good showing for him. I'm seeing more of this Roman Reigns hate out there online. Look, if you want to hate on the guy's promos, be my guest. They've sucked. But his one line about punching Show in the mouth, I thought he came off great. You know, that's the way that this guy should be booked. A man of few words, and what few words he has to say, it should not be scripted. Give him a sense of what you want him to say. Let him go out there and just say it. Say whatever comes to mind. It's not so much that he's a bad promo. He's a bad scripted promo. You look at his promo on the NXT show. It was so obvious he was trying to memorize lines or reading off cue cards. It was one of the worst parts of the whole NXT show. Not the fact that they would send a big star there like Roman Reigns, but having him cut that kind of promo, he stood out like a sore thumb because that's not the kind of thing you usually see on NXT. You know, and I'm sure they're giving them dialogue that they have to read. But when Roman Reigns comes across as the fakest thing on the developmental show, you know something's wrong. So I can't really put all the blame on him. He's not the best promo in the world, but he's not getting any help either. Just like the New Day is not getting any help. They're not helping these guys. It's almost like if they get over, they have to get over in spite of what WWE does to them or what obstacles they put in their way. I mean, a guy like a Rusev, they put the rocket on him, and he's been pushed very strong throughout the year. But a lot of these other guys, they're not getting any help at all. And the fact that some of them can stay over and get over is what makes it even more impressive to me, because there's a lot of guys who have no right getting over the way they're pushed. So I had no problem with this. I thought Roman Reigns was fine. I like Roman Reigns. I think he's going to be just fine. I think the hate on him is not warranted. And I think that injury he suffered and the time off did him a world of good, because now he feels fresh again, and the crowds are reacting big to the guy. It doesn't matter what you think. He's going out there, and the crowds are reacting big to him. He's getting a monster reaction. It's not like he's going out there and getting booed, which may happen at some point, but it ain't happening right now. He's going out there, and they're treating him like a superstar. So if you're a hater, you're going to have to come up with a better reason to hate this guy than his promos suck, or he only has 5 moves. Guess what? So did Goldberg. Goldberg had 5 moves, and he did pretty well for himself, too, as the resident badass on the WCW roster. He was another one. The less said, the better. Just arrive, snort, spit, kick ass, and leave. That's all Roman Reigns has to do. They just have to cut back on the scripted dialogue. That's his weakness. Otherwise, I think the guy's going to be just fine. During the New Day match against Golden Stardust that nobody cared about, Michael Cole gave us 2 big reasons to download the WWE app. So you could vote for the match stipulation between Jericho and Paul Heyman, a match that never actually happened and where every stipulation was the same, and so you could see JBL do the New Day dance during the commercial break. This was like a commercial for why everybody should collectively uninstall the WWE app. Just horrible. It was nice to see Jimmy Jacobs get some screen time on Raw. He was part of the Rosebuds on, I think, Raw and SmackDown this week. We had a little Age of the Fall reunion going on backstage with Jimmy Jacobs, Seth Rollins, Luke Harper, Joey Mercury. They posted a photo backstage of all of them together. I still remember the one angle they did in Ring of Honor where they hung, I think it was Jay Briscoe, probably Jay Briscoe, upside down from the ceiling. He was split open, just pouring blood, and they hung him upside down from the ceiling, and he bled out, and Jimmy Jacobs in his white suit stood right underneath the guy, just bathing himself in this guy's blood. His suit turned red. It was disgusting. It was so gross. I don't even think they ended up showing it on TV. It was too graphic to air on television, I think. Jimmy Jacobs is still with ROH. He's part of the Decade, but I guess he must not be under contract so that he can do stuff like this. If he was under contract with Sinclair, I don't think there's a prayer he would have been on the show. Kane became my hero when he tombstoned the Bunny, but then I saw that the Bunny was back on SmackDown the very next night. They didn't even hold him. They didn't even hold her, him, it, her, whatever the fuck it is, out for a week. The Bunny was right back the next night. Unbelievable. Main event was John Cena and Seth Rollins, steel cage match. Brock Lesnar came out later on in the match. He killed John Cena with German suplexes, laid him out with an F5. He spared Seth Rollins. Rollins shook hands with Paul Heyman, and then very slowly walked out the door to the floor for the win. So Seth Rollins gets a win over John Cena in what was a pretty good cage match. Pretty good match. And I still say, you know, this whole unholy alliance now that seems to exist with Seth Rollins and Paul Heyman, I don't think Seth Rollins is a Paul Heyman guy. My understanding of this is that they have a business understanding, whatever the relationship is. I don't think he's a full-blown Heyman guy. But my thought after this happened is the same as my thought now. I look at Seth Rollins, and all I could think is, He'll never see it coming. He'll never see it coming because this is all just one big ruse on the part of Heyman and Lesnar. And when the time is right, they're going to drop Seth Rollins like a bad habit. And he will not see it coming. At least that's where I think this is going. So that was Raw. Not a good show. It had its moments. I could just hit the play button. I should record this and just hit the play button because it seems like I say the same thing every single week. As a whole, Raw is no good. And the biggest thing I noticed when Brock Lesnar is on this show and he decides to grace us with his presence on this show is it really reminds me of what Raw is missing when he's not there. Now, you can't have him on the show every week because then it's not going to be special. You won't have that same feeling when his music hits. But when he's gone, boy, do you notice the difference. Or at least I do. I know some people just absolutely hate Brock Lesnar. They wish he would go away. I think that if that were to happen, Raw is going to be much worse because of it. So you don't realize it until he finally comes back and then he leaves again, what Raw is missing. Because the moments that he was on this show were great. There was an intensity about it where it's like, uh-oh. Like, he's got your attention, right? You're not dozing off. You're not doing something else in the background. You're 100% focused on what this guy is about to do or what he is doing, which is usually killing dudes. And what's not to like about Brock Lesnar killing dudes on television? I mean, come on. Congrats to Aiden English and Shaw Guerrero, daughter of Eddie Guerrero. They are now engaged, according to Vicky Guerrero's Twitter. That is a couple I never would have guessed. NXT this week, there was no Sami Zayn celebration on this show. No Sami Zayn, period. What a concept. The champion gets hurt. They keep him off television for a week. I wish they would do that more often on the main show. Dean Ambrose gets his trachea crushed, which is actually a life-threatening injury, by the way. And he's back on television showing no ill effects just a few days later. He gets practically electrocuted on live television and is back 2 days later. Why would anybody care about any injury angle they do in WWE? At least on NXT, they seem to know what they're doing. So the show opened with an Adrian Neville promo. He calls out Kevin Owens, called him shameful in this promo. Kevin Owens says he doesn't care what Neville thinks, or anybody else for that matter, but if he wants to fight him, then they'll fight. So that set up the main event on this show. Pretty big match. First meeting here between Adrian Neville and Kevin Owens. Tyler Breeze did a selfie promo backstage saying that he's going to be taking some time off to do some modeling, but he will be back soon. This makes me very sad. I haven't heard anything about like an injury, so I don't know why he's going away or for how long. Hopefully he'll be back soon. Becky Lynch beat Bayley with a wacky leg lock submission. I didn't catch if they gave it a name. They may have, but if they did, I didn't catch it. I mean, they had a pretty good match for the length that it lasted. Again, she used the submission to get the win. And I'm telling you, you know, it's like Sarah Del Rey is training her own army of female submission specialists down there at the Performance Center. Paige, Emma, Sasha, Carmella, now Becky, all with believable, brutal-looking submission holds in their arsenal. More devastating than any STF or sleeper hold I've ever seen John Cena use in a match. And Charlotte's another one, you know. Although I haven't seen her use the figure eight recently, she'll dust it off every now and then. That's another cool-looking move, so he could put her on the list, too. They're all great. They're all awesome. I love it. The Vaudevillains met with Commissioner William Regal backstage. Simon Gotch pointed out that he was not the legal man when he was pinned by Kalisto at the TakeOver show, and Regal said, by God, you're right. So they will be in a rematch with the Lucha Dragons next week for the tag team titles. Bull Dempsey beat somebody really quickly. Baron Corbin beat somebody really quickly. And they had a stare down when the match was over in the aisleway. And finally, somebody blinked, finally, and Bull shoved him. This was high comedy because they're standing on this little ramp that they have, okay, that leads to the stage. And they're eyeball to eyeball. And Corbin's looking down because Bull Dempsey's kind of a short, stocky guy. And Baron Corbin's a big dude. He's probably every bit of 6'7", 6'8". Maybe not 6'8", but He's way up there. He's much taller than Bull Dempsey is. And Bull Dempsey shoves him. And then I think it was almost like Bull didn't want to fall off the little ramp. And it was just, I don't know. Corbin could have easily grabbed him and beaten the shit out of him. He just kind of stood there as Bull not fell off, but kind of stumbled off the stage and walked around the site. It was just, I don't know, I thought the whole thing was funny. And this is obviously building to an eventual match between the two of them. Maybe they'll hold off until the next TakeOver special, which I'm guessing will be in February, but they haven't announced anything yet. The Ascension beat Enzo Amore and Colin Cassidy very quickly when Enzo was more interested in impressing Carmella outside the ring, who was not paying any attention to him at all. And he got killed by Victor and pinned. It looked like they may have been teasing a breakup after the match with that look that Big Cass gave Enzo, but he did end up helping him out of the ring. Hopefully it was just a look out of frustration and not a sign of something more. It would be certifiable to break these guys up before they make it to the main roster. You see what happens when you bring a woman into the equation here. You see? I mean, that's what happens. They screw things up. I'm sorry. But that's what happens all the time. And the main event was Adrian Neville and Kevin Owens. They had a damn good match. I really enjoyed this. Especially that DDT spot. Oh my God. What a... There is nobody better at selling a DDT in WWE than Adrian Neville. I think he did something similar in that four-way match at TakeOver. Now this. I mean, this thing looked just absolutely brutal. I thought Kevin Owens was great. I mean, he's really... he conducts himself in a way where it's very hard for people to cheer him, even the people who do want to cheer for him. There's nothing redeemable. Again, we've seen him on one show as the heel so far, but he didn't do anything that would get people to cheer him. No catchphrase or anything like that. He's kind of mocking Neville throughout the match. He's yelling things at him. He says, "Nothing I do makes me shameful." And you were the champ for a year? What a joke. And just trash-talking him the whole time. Then that DDT. And they ended up outside the ring. Both guys got counted out. So it was a double count-out finish. And Kevin Owens then laid out Adrian Neville with a apron powerbomb. So he laid him out the same way he did to Sami Zayn at the TakeOver special. He did the whole stretcher job and everything when they went off the air. So Kevin Owens has not been around very long, and already he's put two guys on the shelf. Then I got to have anybody left on the roster if they keep this up. So I thought this was fantastic. The finish was fine. I didn't mind it at all. I didn't expect there to be a clean finish. It's their first match, you know? It's like the first show after a pay-per-view for these guys. What'd you expect? I expect that this is not the last we've seen of these two. So the finish was fine, especially after the powerbomb. That was another impactful way to go off the air. And next week, it's the night of rematches. I guess that would be this upcoming Thursday, Christmas Day. It's the night of rematches with Charlotte defending her women's championship against Sasha Banks. I'm not really sure why. When you're the challenger and you lose and you fail to win the title, why you get a rematch, I don't know. But they're doing the rematch. Look, if the match is as good as the match they had at TakeOver, I won't complain. And the Vaude Villains will meet the Lucha Dragons for the tag team titles. At least that is a match that makes sense. They need to send Tyson Kidd and Cesaro back down here for a feud with Finn Balor and Hideo Itami. That would fucking rock. Can you imagine? I mean, they're not doing anything right now anyway with Cesaro. Tyson Kidd will make appearances on Raw. I mean, that's fine. He can still make appearances. But take those two. If they're going to be a tag team, please, for the love of God, I'm begging Triple H, I'm begging somebody, take those two guys, bring them down to NXT. It's almost like a promotion, okay? Promote them to NXT and just start building right now for that tag team match on the next special. I want to see those four guys, Balor, Itami, Kidd, and Cesaro, in the ring together in the worst way. You have no idea. And I don't trust that by the time Itami and Balor make it to the main roster that Tyson Kidd and Cesaro will even be a thing anymore. So I'd love to see them go down there for one program with those guys. Curtis Axel, they're also, they've promoted him to NXT. Welcome to NXT, Curtis Axel. There was something that aired on YouTube where he barged into William Regal's office and said, "Listen, you know, he's been down to the dumps. He's looking to recharge the batteries and kind of rejuvenate his career. He sees what it's done to guys like Tyson Kidd. He wants the same." And Regal said he'd give him a shot. So it looks like we're going to see more of Curtis Axel on this show. And I hope that they can get something going with him. You know, he's a talented guy. He's dead as a doornail right now. NXT may be the only thing that could help rejuvenate his career, so I hope it works out. NXT is like the place when WWE fucks you up, when Vince McMahon completely fucks you up, they send you to NXT almost like to fix you, like Triple H has to fix you back up and put you back in a position where you can actually be somebody special. That's kind of the new formula that I notice now. When you've got nothing going on the main roster and you're just kind of sitting there twiddling your thumbs and nobody gives two shits about you, just go down to Orlando. They'll get you fixed up. ProWrestlingTees.com is the new home for Sound Off shirts and apparel. Get your official Solomonster Sounds Off logo t-shirt and other assorted designs like the new Eat Sleep Sound Off Repeat shirt, which sounds an awful lot like a typical week for me. And I know it is for some of you guys as well. Now you can show your support for the podcast wherever you go by buying a shirt. Hell, buy two of them. Pro Wrestling Tees accepts PayPal as payment and ships internationally all over the world. The more shirts we sell, the more designs we'll be able to offer in the future, but we can only do that with your help. Be one of the first 25 people to buy a shirt, and you'll get a shout-out right here on the Sound Off. Visit ProWrestlingTees.com/SolomonsterSoundsOff to go directly to our new store. That's ProWrestlingTees.com/SolomonsterSoundsOff. Got some really depressing ratings notes on Lucha Underground from the Observer newsletter this week. The second episode of Lucha Underground did 41,000 viewers. The third episode did 31,000. The fourth episode did 22,000. The fifth one did even less than that. By the sixth episode, they were down to 16,000 viewers. And then on the show where they had the three-way ladder match that Johnny Mundo won over Prince Puma and Big Rick, that shot up to 34,000 viewers. But the show does between 150,000 and 200,000 on average on Unimas, which is the Spanish-language version of the show, but that doesn't matter to the El Rey Network. The El Rey Network would love to have numbers like that, and they just keep going down. So that is very distressing, and it makes me very concerned for what may happen in 2015. But they are soldiering on. They're having more tapings, I believe, in January, February, and March. So Lucha Underground will be around for a while yet. This was the last episode, though, of 2014. They're back on TV January 7th with a brand new episode. We had two 10-man matches on this week's show. One fall to a finish, and the other was a battle royal. The two winners then met in the main event, with the winner entering Aztec Warfare last. Aztec Warfare is basically a 20-man Royal Rumble match. On the first show of the new year is when that will take place. The loser of the match, at the end of this show this week, will enter Aztec Warfare first. They'll enter at number one. And the winner of that match on January 7th will be crowned the new Lucha Underground champion. And Dario Cueto held up the new title belt, which actually looks kind of cool. So we had Phoenix pinning Prince Puma in the opening 10-man match. I can't even begin to recap everything that happened here. It was a lot of great action. I really enjoyed it. Phoenix and Puma both are two of the bright young stars on that roster. They do incredible things. There were a lot of dives. That's all I can say in this match. But in the end, Phoenix got the pin on Puma, which did not make Conan very happy as he chastised Puma when this match was over. We had a Boyle Heights Battle Royal. That was the other 10-man match, which included Pimpinella Escarlata, the Exotico, who was on the show a few weeks ago, and Sexy Star. So I guess that made this an intergender Battle Royal. Chavo was in there. Mil Muertes was in there. He got the win. Mil Muertes was the final two in there with Johnny Mundo. Johnny Mundo did something that we've seen him do many times before in Royal Rumble matches in the past, which is skin the cat, hang on to the rope for dear life, trying not to let his feet touch the floor. He's very good at that. But in the end, he could not outlast Mil Muertes, so Muertes got the win. Dario Cueto brought them both out to the ring at the end of the show. Neither guy knew why they were out there, and that's when Cueto announced that they were going to have a match right here, right now. And the winner would be number 20 in Aztec Warfare on January 7th. So Mil Muertes had a match with Phoenix. It was okay, and Mil Muertes won with the Flatliner. So he will enter Aztec Warfare last when they are back on TV. Final scene of the show was Dario Cueto meeting with his monster again in his jail cell. So as one of our listeners, Steve, pointed out to me in an email last week, I kept asking, what is this key for? What's the significance of the key? They really haven't explained that. Dario's key, as Steve pointed out, and it makes sense after seeing this, is likely the key to this guy's cell. Whoever this monster is that they have locked up in jail, the key is likely to his cell. So now at least it makes sense. And that was the show. I know that's a quick down and dirty recap of Lucha Underground. You really just have to watch both 10-man matches to see all the different spots. You know, it was certainly a spot fest, lots of different things going on there. But the story they told was very simple. Again, the two winners meeting. Aztec Warfare is the big match that they've set up. And at least now, you know, because Johnny Mundo won the $100,000, right? He won the money in the briefcase last week. You need something for these guys to fight for. You need a championship, and now they have one, and we're going to get our first Lucha Underground champion crowned at the beginning of the year, and now there will be something for people to fight for, so I like that. Let's talk about your mailbag questions. How about that? Email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. I do read everything you send me. I'm going through each email slowly but surely. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Luis from Brooklyn, New York has something to rant about. It's not really a question, and I think he makes a great point, so I wanted to share it. He says, WWE has truly screwed this whole thing up. They want to position Roman Reigns as the one who finally conquers Brock Lesnar. The problem is Brock Lesnar has not conquered anybody aside from The Streak and John Cena. They want Roman Reigns to put an end to Lesnar's dominance, but Lesnar has not dominated anybody. He fought John Cena twice, and soon to be a third. That's not dominating. That's beating one man three times, or twice, since the second time Cena won by DQ. They should have booked Lesnar the way they are booking Rusev. They are having Rusev plow through challenger after challenger so that when the day comes that somebody finally steps up and beats him for that U.S. title, it will mean so much more because of Rusev's actual dominance over other competitors. They had from SummerSlam until WrestleMania to put big guys like Orton, Cesaro, Big Show, and just one rematch with John Cena to truly portray Brock Lesnar as a real dominating champion. Then Reigns going to WrestleMania to finally beat him for the belt would mean so much more. But unfortunately, this is what we are left with. Just another Cena-Lesnar match with no momentum, and then Brock Lesnar takes another 2 months off to lose to Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. And this isn't just a stab at Lesnar, it's a stab at WWE for presenting this kind of contract to Lesnar, because they are so reliant on established names with zero confidence in their own roster that they are willing to agree to ridiculous terms like these, hoping it will draw a profit. I get the sense from that email that Luis is very upset. But you know what? He makes a good point in this respect. They are going to tell this story. Whoever beats Brock Lesnar, whether it's John Cena at the Royal Rumble, which is what I'm starting to think, or if they actually do Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania and have Roman Reigns win, especially if they do it with Roman Reigns, it'll feel somewhat hollow, because Luis is right. I mean, what has Brock Lesnar really dominated ever since John Cena at SummerSlam? He had the one rematch with Cena. He did not dominate in that rematch. It was actually very even. In fact, John Cena had the match won. He had Brock Lesnar beat. There was no dominance in that match. There was dominance in one match in August. He's done nothing since. So if that's the story they're trying to tell, yes, he broke the streak, and yes, he did beat John Cena, but it would have worked so much more had he gone through one or two other people in the interim, because then it's like there's nobody who can beat this guy. He not only beat the streak, he beat John Cena, but he also beat, Randy Orton. He also beat Sheamus, or maybe he beat Dean Ambrose or whoever, before Roman Reigns or John Cena, whoever, finally beats him. It would have made for a better story. And I think that's a valid point, absolutely. And I'm disappointed in the way that they've handled this whole thing. And that's not Brock's fault, that's on WWE. Keyshawn from Brooklyn, New York. Back-to-back Brooklyn emails here. I swear that was a coincidence. I have a coworker who thinks that today's wrestlers suck compared to those of the Attitude Era. And while I agree to a certain extent, I feel today's wrestlers are more athletic and the actual wrestling today is better. He blames the wrestlers, but I feel it has more to do with the company slash writers. He also thinks that your character should come through in the ring and that you should not rely on promos. Well, I mean, wrestling's always been that way. You have to be able to cut a good promo to convey whatever it is you're trying to convey. Anger, if you're going after the championship, I can't tell you how many great go-home promos going back to the NWA in the 80s, you know, that the great baby faces like Dusty Rhodes have cut, great heels like Ric Flair. I mean, you have to be a good promo. That's nothing new. That's not a PG-era thing. It's not even an Attitude-era thing. That's a wrestling thing. So I would disagree with your friend on that. Some guys can get away with just conveying shit in the ring, like a Goldberg, and maybe Roman Reigns should be like that. Brock Lesnar certainly is not a good promo. He does his talking in the ring, or he lets Paul Heyman do the talking for him. So I would disagree on that. The wrestlers of today suck compared to the Attitude Era. I disagree with that. I think everything is relative. You got to look at things. Wrestling is different now. I mean, you really think that these guys on the roster now wouldn't love to have the handcuffs taken off and to be able to go out there and have the freedom and have the leeway creatively and verbally to say and do some of the things that DX did back in the day, or Stone Cold, or the Ministry, Undertaker, The Rock, you know, the corporate champion, Triple H. I mean, all these guys. It was just a different time. And they had, back then it wasn't a publicly traded company. You know, they didn't become a publicly traded company until, I think, the summer of 99. So you had most of that Attitude Era. They were a private company. They didn't really have very many people to answer to. Some sponsors, but not like it would become later on. And so they pushed the envelope. They were also in competition with another wrestling organization. They were getting their ass handed to them. So they chose to go in a different direction. You can't compare the Attitude Era to today's wrestlers. I think that's being unfair to today's wrestlers, because I think there's plenty of guys on the roster today who would have been just fine in the Attitude Era doing what those guys were doing back then. I think it's very unfair to say these guys suck, those guys were great. Those guys were bigger stars, absolutely. They were much bigger stars. Even some of the stars today are really not anywhere close to the kind of stars that those guys were back then. But to say that they suck, it's not fair to them. It's a different time. It's the PG era. They've got sponsors to answer to. They've got Mattel and lots of different considerations. And remember what Steve Austin said. He's talked to these guys. They're walking on eggshells. They're afraid to look at their own shadow. They won't even speak up. Some guys will. Most guys won't. I mean, were guys walking on eggshells back in 1998? Probably not. It probably was a much looser environment, and it's just a different time. I don't think you can say that these guys suck, because it's not fair. You can't accurately judge that because they've got handcuffs on them right now. CJ writes in, I know you are against Sting getting a championship run, but if WWE decides to give him the belt, what would you think about it? As a Sting fan, I think he deserves at least one championship run, even if it is just with the Intercontinental or U.S. title. I don't think anybody deserves any kind of championship run. I don't know where you're getting this whole thing that Sting deserves anything. He probably signed a very lucrative, cushy deal for himself with WWE. He's going to get exposure now the way he hasn't had since the WCW days. He's going to get a big fat payday for whatever his matches at WrestleMania. He's going to get a Hall of Fame induction, if not next year, probably the year after. He's got a new DVD out, new t-shirts. He deserves a championship, bro. Well, what difference does it make? Who cares? I don't think he cares one bit. You think he gives a shit if he holds the title or not? I don't think Sting, the character or the person, deserves any kind of title run. I don't know where this whole notion that he deserves this comes from. I disagree. Jaquarius from Phoenix City, Alabama. I am a huge fan of Roman Reigns, and there are many fans out there who would rather see Brock Lesnar versus Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania 31. I prefer to see Roman Reigns against Brock Lesnar. Which match would you rather see? As a match, I kind of talked about this earlier. As a match, I think Brock Lesnar and Daniel Bryan would be infinitely better than Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns. I think that Bryan can go in there and have an even better match. The kind of match that Brock had with Punk at SummerSlam that I thought was the match of the year in 2013. Even though Daniel Bryan next to Brock Lesnar, you might laugh. You might bust a gut laughing and say, God, you know, I can't for even a minute believe that this is a believable match. But that's where the whole pro wrestling suspension of disbelief thing comes in. People said the same thing about CM Punk. Punk may be a little bit taller than Bryan, but Punk is a skinny fat dude who next to Brock Lesnar looks like a fucking fan. And guess what? They went out there and they had a fucking war. From the moment that bell hit, that thing was just pure action from bell to bell. It was a fucking great match. At no point during the match did I look at it and go, man, I can't buy into this. Like, all that went out the window. Even if I felt that way a little bit, it all went out the window. I was so engrossed in the match. It was a great match. And Daniel Bryan, I think, is just a better wrestler than CM Punk. And so I think if you put him in there with Brock, you're going to get an even better match out of it. By the time those guys hit the midway point, there's not going to be a single person in that crowd thinking, God, I can't get into this match, man. This guy is just too small. He's a midget next to Brock Lesnar. I can't buy into any of this. They're going to be on the edge of their seat. They're going to be cheering for Brock, or they're going to be cheering for Bryan, whoever they're a fan of. It's not going to matter how big or small the guy is. They're going to go out there and have a kick-ass match. So I've been dying for that match for over a year now. obviously I'm going to have to pick that match. I mean, I just think it would be a better match. But I don't hate the idea of Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar. I actually kind of like it because at least it's somebody fresh. It's somebody not named Cena for him to go in there with. And Roman Reigns is a big dude. He's a big badass dude. Brock Lesnar is a big badass dude. You get two big bulls going one-on-one. Yeah, maybe it's not going to be a great technical masterpiece, but I think they could probably have a fun match. But if you force me to choose, I'm going to have to go with Brock and Brian. Joseph from Connecticut. John Morrison's been holding it down on Lucha Underground, but what if his popularity rises high enough there? Do you think he would be able to go back to WWE as a top guy, or should he stay in Lucha Underground and be the face of the company? What would be the smarter move? The smarter move is to go wherever he'll be the happiest and where he'll make the most money. That's the smarter move. Where is he going to draw the biggest paycheck from, and is he happy there? He may draw more money from WWE, but I don't think he's going to be happy there. I mean, that's why he left in the first place. They never pushed him high enough where he felt he belonged. I mean, Morrison's a great athlete. He's not a great promo at all. That's my biggest knock on the guy, even to this day. I just think it's such a big part of wrestling. It's such a big part of being in WWE. It's not as though he's done a complete, 180-degree transformation, and now he can go out there and hang with The Rock on the mic and some of those guys. I just don't think that's his strong suit. But going in there and doing wacky, crazy moves, yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's fun to watch. I don't think that him going back to WWE would result in him being a top guy at all. I think he'd go back. Maybe he would kind of be positioned that way for a few weeks, and he'd end up right back where he was before. He'd be a mid to upper mid card guy. I don't think anything has really changed. So if I were him, I think the smart move is just to keep doing what he's doing. He's not just doing Lucha Underground, man. He's kind of the face of Lucha Underground in a way, but he's also doing indies. You know, he's doing his own thing, and he's making movies on the side. So I would just keep doing what you're doing. That would be the smart move. Dean writes in, Drew McIntyre, now Galloway, was unfortunately released by WWE back in June. When appearing on Chris Jericho's podcast and Colt Cabana's podcast, he reiterated that he will return to WWE. Based on their policy of bringing talents up through NXT, do you expect to see Drew return, or is it one Scottish fan's wishful thinking? Well, look, they brought back Chris Masters, right? They don't do it very often, but he was a guy that got canned, and they brought him back. And actually, when Masters came back, he was much better. He was slimmed down. He had gotten more experience working, I think, overseas. He was a better wrestler. He's a better performer overall. And then they did nothing with him, and they let him go. And that, to me, more so than letting him go the first time, letting him go the second time was a really shitty move, I think, on WWE's part, because the guy actually improved. He got better, and they still let him go. So they have a history of doing that to guys, and other guys they just won't bring back, even though they may tell them, hey, you know, the door's always open, let's talk again in 6 months. Do I think they would bring him back? Yeah, I could see them bringing him back. Here's the problem, though. If they bring back Drew McIntyre, he will be right back where he was before. I don't have a doubt in my mind about it. He will be right back, maybe either doing comedy like he was, or even just a mid-card guy with no real direction, no real program or anything. And the reason is, if they saw something in him, they would have done something with him. He was not around for 2 or 3 years. He's another guy who's been around for 5, 6, maybe 7 years. When he came in, he got the big push, the big endorsement on TV from Vince McMahon. He was the Intercontinental Champion. And then he violated the doctrine. Him and his wife got in a little tiff at the Playboy Mansion, and they pissed somebody off, and he was never the same after that. Don't piss anybody off. How many times have I said that on the show this week? So he meandered around without much in the way of any direction, and then he hooked up with 3MB, and he was wrestling bulls in the ring. That's what he was reduced to. And I don't think that him going away for 6 months or going away for a year and then coming back is going to result in any sort of change in Vince McMahon's way of thinking. It's like, hey, he's a hell of a hand. Let's bring him back. We can use him as a utility player on the roster. I don't see him ever being any kind of big star in WWE. And it's not because he can't be. I think he's very talented. I think the stuff that I've seen of him on YouTube, like working in ICW, which I think is based over in Scotland. And I mean, yeah, he's back home and it's a much smaller crowd, so obviously it's going to be easier to get a big reaction like that, but he's tearing it up right now. And even on the indies, you know, I'll read reports. I haven't seen any of his matches, but I've read reports of him working some indie shows and like stuff down in Florida, and he's having some of the best matches on those shows, and he's tearing it up because he's that good. And WWE never saw it. My hope is that some of these guys, I wish they were more financially secure to the point where WWE could cut bait on them, and it's their loss, and they don't know what they're missing out on. And these guys go out, and they do exactly what Drew McIntyre is doing, and then have WWE come call him back and be able to tell WWE, fuck you, I'm not coming back. You had me, you lost me, now you can go fuck off. I wish that these guys had the financial stability to be able to do that. I get the sense they don't. So if WWE came calling and you can make a lot of money there, then why wouldn't you? But I just don't see them ever doing anything with him. And it's a great goal for him to have. I'm sure, you know, that's his goal. You know, he wants to end up back in WWE and he'll be a better overall performer. But so is Chris Masters. And look what they did to him. So I don't have any faith that they would even know what to do with the guy. So that's kind of my take on it. Would they take him back? Yeah, but you're not going to see Drew McIntyre in any main events on Raw or pay-per-views. You know, once you're branded a certain way, and it's hard with him because he was doing comedy stuff with midgets. This wasn't just him as like a Zack Ryder guy that you kind of feel bad for. He jobs out to everybody. This was a guy they were doing comedy stuff with. It would be like them suddenly waking up one day and saying, hey, let's make Santino a main eventer. Let's make Damian Mizdow a main eventer. I love Damian Mizdow. He will never be a main eventer. He will never sniff the main event. And that's just the reality of it. Especially now that he's been branded a certain way. He's the comedy guy. He's the guy that makes you laugh. That's not their vision of a main eventer. And that's how Drew McIntyre has been branded, unfortunately. And it sucks. Daniel from Texas. With WrestleMania season just around the corner, who would you put in the Hall of Fame class of 2015? My Hall of Fame, I've gotten a lot of questions about this, so I've thought about it. My Hall of Fame class for 2015 would be headlined by Sting and Randy Savage. So that way you have one guy who's actually here who can accept the award. Savage, unfortunately, not here, can't accept the award. You can't really headline with a guy who is dead. I mean, you can, but that's not what they do. So you headline with Sting and Savage. Vader, I think Sting versus Vader was a fantastic rivalry in WCW back in the day. I think Sting is Vader's greatest rival, quite frankly. So it would be appropriate if they end up going in together in the same class. Demolition, Axe and Smash, sorry, Crush, you don't count. The Freebirds, finally. I don't know why they aren't already in. I don't know why they didn't go in Atlanta a few years ago. So the Freebirds should go in, and Medusa could be the female inductee, Alundra Blaze. I think she definitely deserves to go in. I think whatever happened with her and the belt on Nitro back in the day, again, Eric Bischoff put her up to it. She shouldn't have to bear the sins for that. I think enough time has gone by. Vince McMahon has forgiven everybody else under the sun except Randy Savage. I don't know why he wouldn't welcome her back in for a Hall of Fame induction. So I think that's a pretty strong class right there. That's a hell of a strong class, in my opinion. No room for Rick Rude, but he's definitely going in the year after if it's up to me. So that would be my Hall of Fame class. I wouldn't put him in it because I feel like he'd kind of get lost in there. And at the same time, you also don't want to have too many big names every single year. Like, you don't want to put 8 guys in every single year because then you're not going to have anybody left to put in. So I'd save Rick Rude for the year after, but he's another one who absolutely should be in the Hall of Fame. And it's better anyway also because you want to just shy away from having too many dead people in one year. I mean, that's just the reality of it. Unfortunately, with wrestling, it's a sad reality. There's a lot of guys who died young who deserve to be in the Hall of Fame who aren't in yet. And you really don't want to double up on those guys in one year. So I'd save Rick Rude for 2016. Want to say congratulations to the guys over at Pro Wrestling Syndicate. They scored some television time with WLNY, which is channel 10/55. If that sounds weird, it is. WLNY is a channel that I have. Okay, it's a local channel here in New York. I think it's mostly Long Island-centric. But it used to be New York 55. That was actually the channel that aired Shotgun Saturday Night episodes here in New York when that show was on back in 97. And for whatever reason, at some point, I guess maybe one of the cable providers moved it to Channel 10. So now they just rebranded it. It's like Channel 10/55. It's the stupidest thing. But I'm happy because I have the channel. Now, the only drawback is the show debuts on January 3rd at 4:30 in the morning. So I will not be watching that show live. That will be on my DVR, but I am planning on checking it out. That's a lot of wrestling. That's the same weekend as the New Japan pay-per-view, that four-hour New Japan show that airs at 1 o'clock in the morning, and I'm still going back and forth in my head on when I want to watch it. I would love to watch it live. I don't think that's going to happen. I'm probably going to have to just... Maybe I'll do the show a day early that weekend and just stay off Twitter, stay away from any results that Sunday and watch the replay at 7 o'clock. I haven't made up my mind yet. But there's going to be a lot of wrestling on television going into 2015. You could add Pro Wrestling Syndicate now to that list. It's a local, I think like a Northeastern-based indie that does have some big names they bring in for shows. So I am very interested to check out their first show. So that's going to wrap up the mailbag. Keep sending in your questions. I'm going to attempt to do a sound-off inbox, a brand new sound-off inbox for our YouTube channel, either later this week or next week. So I am putting a log of your questions together. So keep them coming in. TheSolomonster@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter, @Solomonster is my handle. Facebook.com/TheSolomonster is my profile page. We have a fan page on Facebook. You must like that page first if you want to then gain entry into our private discussion group. I can tell which people have liked the page and which ones haven't. If you have not liked it, you will not get in. It is that simple. And subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheSolomonster. Like I said, there should be a brand new sound-off extra going up later this week or the following week. And there's only a few days left. You can nominate the Solomonster Sounds Off for Show of the Year in the 2015 Wrestling Radio Awards. I don't exactly know how much time is left, but it's running out very quickly. So if you have not nominated our show yet, you can vote daily as long as nominations are open. Go to WrestlingRadioAwards.com. Please type in the full name of the podcast and our URL, TheSolomonster.com, in the first field. In the second field, you can put in whatever your favorite pro wrestling podcast interview was all year long, but you must fill both fields out. Click submit and help nominate us for Show of the Year. I would be forever grateful if you do so. Thank you to everybody who helped make this podcast one of the top 10 podcasts in all of Podbean for the year 2014. That would not have been possible without your support and your streaming and downloading, both through Podbean and through Stitcher. Keep supporting us on there as well. Last I checked, we were in the top 10 charts in the sports category on there as well. So thank you for making this one hell of a 2014. We got one more show left to go before the new year. So until then, be well, stay safe, have yourself a very Merry Christmas. Again, Happy Hanukkah to those who are celebrating, Happy Kwanzaa as well, and we will be right back here with a brand new podcast next weekend. Until then, Happy Holidays.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
If we get another John Cena versus Randy Orton match, so help me God, I will put a voodoo curse on everybody in that company. I think I'm joking. Just try me. I have my little voodoo doll I bought when I was in New Orleans for WrestleMania. I'm looking at it right now across the room. It's right over there. It's got a white pin for good luck and a black pin for evil. Don't make me go black on your ass.
Since 2007, The Solomonster Sounds Off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster Sound Off.
Well, you know what they say, Solomonster. It's better to be pissed on than pissed, pissed away than pissed, pissed to the right. No, it's better to be something pissed off. Well, you know what they say, Slobber Monster. It's better to be pissed on than pissed, just mad, angry. Well, you know what they say, Slobber Monster. It's better to be pissed than not pissed at all. You know what they say, Slobber Monster. It's better to be pissed on than pissed than pissed, better to be off.